The latest polls, and it seems like we have new ones almost every day, show Donald Trump leading the Republican primary with 27%. That's 1 point lower than the Republican frontrunner had 1 year before the last election. That was Texas Governor Rick Perry. And who can forget this moment in the November primary debate of 2011?
It's three agencies of government when I get there that are gone. Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
Oops. Well, Perry eventually lost the nomination to Mitt Romney. And a year before the 1980 election, the Democrat who stood out as the clear leader was Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy. The eventual winner, Jimmy Carter, of course, was still polling then in single digits. So what does it mean to be leading the pack 1 year before Election Day? If history is a measuring stick, the answer is not much. Our next guest writes about what he calls the frontrunner fallacy in the latest issue of The Atlantic. David Greenberg also teaches history at Rutgers University. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me on.
So let's start with a look back at some of the frontrunners who didn't make it. There are some pretty dramatic cases out there of people who were really leading the pack 1 year before but were all but forgotten come Election Day. Names like Gary Hart, Jesse Jackson, Jerry Brown, and who can forget this person?
We're going to California and Texas and New York, and we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House! Yeah!
All right. That was, of course, the famous scream of Howard Dean back in 2003, who 1 year before that election cycle was leading the Democratic pack. Who were some of the people who come to your mind as, you know, 1 year before failed frontrunners?
Yeah, I don't think Howard Dean made it to any of those places that he was planning to go to. But this kind of thing, that was, you know, 2004, where Howard Dean famously tanked. You could go back 1979 on the eve of the 1980 election. Everybody expected that Ted Kennedy was going to knock off Jimmy Carter. And even just 4 years ago, Herman Cain had higher numbers than Donald Trump has this year.
Well, let's remind people about Herman Cain just 4 years ago.
I'm ready for the gotcha questions, and they are already starting to come. And when they ask me who's the president of you, Becky, Stan, I'm going to say, you know, I don't know. Do you know?
All right. Well, the gotcha questions got him. 1 year later, he was most definitely not the nominee. But, you know, why don't you explain to us why you think this happens, that you have people who are high in the polls 1 year beforehand and come Election Day, they're nowhere to be seen.
Right. Well, one thing is important for listeners of this show to realize, Indira, you and I and people listening to this show, we tend to be political junkies. So we're really tuned in to who these people are. Most voters simply are not paying attention. So when pollsters call up and ask them who they're inclined to vote for, they'll just throw out a name that's familiar, the person with high name recognition, a person who's been in the media lately. But those reflect very shallow preferences. They don't really reflect considered judgments of most voters.
Well, so name recognition matters at the beginning, not as much later. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention media attention. Does the media create front runners and then tear them down when the attention turns negative? The magnifying glass of press scrutiny didn't work out so well for Gary Hart in 1988.
Hart had been sort of the runner-up in 1984 to Walter Mondale, and so he was first on everybody's lips when they were asked among the so-called seven dwarves of the Democratic candidates who they would vote for. Then, of course, he's tailed, he's followed, his life is given a lot of scrutiny. He's caught with a woman named Donna Rice, and soon that's the end of Gary Hart's campaign. The one who emerged next as the front runner also did so because of name recognition, Jesse Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And it really took a while for people to figure out who these candidates were and ultimately choose Michael Dukakis, who was not terribly well known when the whole race started.
Hmm. So how much of that is about the media and how much attention the press pays 1 year beforehand and creates maybe public opinions?
Well, I think the media attention, in addition to pre-existing name recognition, probably is the main factor that shapes early poll numbers, which is only natural. Who do you hear about? It's through news stories, people who say outrageous things, who pull stunts. It's not surprising that somebody like Donald Trump has bolted to the lead, really, with an announcement speech where he attacked Mexican immigrants, and he has barely been out of the spotlight since. But as people train their focus on really making that choice for Iowa and New Hampshire, those preferences are going to shift.
Well, there's a brand new Twitter handle out there that you probably know about called @PastFrontRunner, started by the Washington Post, where they're tweeting out every day who was ahead this day in history. And I'm looking back here on December 1st of the 2004 cycle, Howard Dean and Wesley Clark were tied. In the 2008 cycle, Hillary Clinton was leading the Democratic field. We know she didn't go on to get the nomination. And Rudy Giuliani was leading the Republican field, each of them by double digits. In 2012, Newt Gingrich on December 1st was leading the Republican field. So, you know, I wonder, none of these came to pass, but are there cases where you're a front runner a year in advance and it really does stick? Is there a certain threshold of support that is unbeatable 12 months down the road?
Oh, it certainly happens sometimes. It tends to happen if you're in a lightly contested field. So Al Gore, as the sitting vice president in 2000, really was never given too much of a scare by Bill Bradley, his only competitor. Ronald Reagan, interestingly, in 1979-1980 was the front runner all the way. Ronald Reagan had run in 1976 before, so again, he was well known. And he got off to an early start and people stuck with him. So the point isn't that the polls are always wrong. It's just that they're not reliably right.
Especially this far in advance when, as you say, the general public is not necessarily paying attention.
That's absolutely right. The problem right now is people have shallow preferences, as I said, but also that they just simply don't have the information and that the press scrutiny that comes with the nearing primaries has the ability to make people think more carefully about their choices. Hmm. Right now, all people have to go on, maybe they've seen a debate, maybe they've read something here or there, but they don't have the kind of depth of knowledge that they like to have when they go into the voting booth.
Hmm. All right. So at what point in the campaign cycle do polls really start to matter and be valid?
Well, they tend to matter differently for each state. So for Iowa and New Hampshire and other early state voters, the polls will start mattering, you know, even just 2 weeks before those primaries. Hmm. But if you're looking at a June primary, a state like California that votes late, California voters really have no reason to start making up their mind then. They know, whether consciously or not, that by the time it's their turn to vote, the whole thing may be over and determined already.
Mm-hmm.
So there's little margin for them to start scrutinizing closely these candidates' positions on ISIS and on healthcare and on lots of difficult matters. It's easier for them, you know, simply to go with a fleeting impression.
Mm-hmm. Because some of those people, if they sit and take the time to actually study them, some of those people won't even be in the race anymore come June, for example.
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, you say that there's some value in this long, drawn-out process, even if the candidates who we think are doing well now end up being relegated to obscurity. How so?
Well, the downside, I suggest, is there's a lot of wasted energy on questions like, is Donald Trump or Ben Carson really going to be the nominee? Can Bernie Sanders really give Hillary Clinton a run for her money? And a lot of idle chatter, excess punditry. But the plus side is that it does, over time, lead us to a much more considered choice. And as a way of contrast, I point to the way that vice presidents are chosen.
Hmm.
And oftentimes, the nominee will keep that choice shrouded in secrecy. The choice is unveiled shortly before the convention with a great element of surprise. And I note this is the process that gives us Sarah Palin and Dan Quayle. So sometimes having that long public vetting serves a very important purpose.
Well, who knows? Maybe we'll start having long primaries for vice president. It's not out of the realm of possibility. Someday it could happen.
And we'll have twice as much punditry to keep us busy.
Absolutely. That's David Greenberg, whose article, The Frontrunner Fallacy, appears in the latest issue of The Atlantic. He teaches history at Rutgers University, and he's the author of the forthcoming book, Republic of Spin, The Inside History of the American Presidency. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, Indira.